All right, let's welcome in our good friend, Brian Christopherson from Husker 24/7. Good, another wet Tuesday morning. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you guys?
Not bad.
Good, Brian.
Hey, quick question. You live in Lincoln now, but you are in Omaha. Everybody okay in your family and friend circle?
They are. My immediate circle is very fortunate, but yeah, my thoughts and prayers to everybody who did get hit hard. I'm pretty close to the Waverly exit, though.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay.
So we saw it spin by, and it yeah, it was pretty destructive. I drove to Omaha yesterday and got a good look at it. So it was. You know what? I know that there might have been. I think I heard there. I'm sad to hear. I heard there was maybe a fatality in Minden, Iowa. But yes. I'm amazed that it is what it is on that regard, and that I'm thankful for that. You know that it was, when you think of that storm's power and everything it was carrying, that it was limited to that. That's pretty amazing to me.
Yeah, it was simply a miracle. But that tornado that you saw from your home, just outside of Waverly. I mean, how impactful it was. All you have to do is look at the damage at Garner Industries.
I mean,
that isn't no small plant.
No, just ripped it apart. You know, there's all sorts of stuff all over the ditch, and yeah, it was something to watch. The in the days after, a lot of people out there today working hard, but yeah, I'm thinking about all those people right now who are picking up and going through things, but I'm happy most people are safe.
Let's transition to what we saw on Saturday. I think I overheard you talking with the two Michaels, and we may have talked about this. When you get
was I talking about Hanley? don't say that.
Yeah, well, we're separate. Those guys from
I wasn't that far away. Hey, I hear everything.
Hey, Caleb and Cole from KLIN won't keep quiet, so it's tough to eavesdrop on people's conversations. When you get the quarterback position right, which Nebraska, I believe, finally has, what does that do to the rest of the offense and the rest of how you operate day to day at Nebraska?
It lifts everything up. I mean, receivers got a jolt in their step, you know, like the thing that stuck out to me about the quarterback play was I don't think Nebraska showed an amazing amount of stuff, a lot of vanilla things, but, you know, Ryola, you know, and Harburg, and, you know, Danny, maybe he didn't shine quite as much as those two, but he did fine. You know, they made the routine stuff look routine, and that's been sort of a problem with, think of like slip screens and some of these screen passes, how hard it's been for Nebraska to get like a play like that right for a lot of years. And there was just some things like that where you're like, man, that just looked fluid, you know, and you could tell that the guys around the quarterback, you know, or they've got to be appreciating and enjoying like catching these things on the run, and it's just a play where it looks like the clock hands are spinning as they are supposed to. It lifts everybody up. That guy's doing well, so you want to do well. It's the same thing Rule's talked about all spring about like the competition of the position. How if someone does something, you want to match it. Well, I think that even carries over to each, you know, position on the ball, where if that guy does something at a certain level, you're like, okay, I got to do that too. Otherwise, I'm going to screw up this play for everybody else. So, yeah, I definitely think it's lifted them on the field. And then the other part of it is, it was the perfect recruiting tool. Like Big John Mills, I just talked to last night, and he's like talking to, you know, Dom Ryola and meeting the family and watching Dylan out there and the ovation he gets. And it makes an impression. It does. It wasn't the only one who talked about Ryola as a recruit. So, you know, guys are on the team. It's lifting them, but it's also lifting guys who are thinking about maybe this is a place that's got some momentum if they might have that position figured out.
I was impressed with some of the big throws, and I think everybody was. I was telling Gary this on Monday. Just the simple throws. Everything being on time on the perimeter, underneath, getting guys in stride, allowing receivers to turn it upfield, little things like that. Is that exactly what we're talking about when it just comes to the simple part of where that offense can be much more effective and having a guy that can make those throws more times than not.
Right. Yes, exactly. And the throw he didn't make once or twice, you know, like
right,
Rule
yeah.
brought up, you know, on the, where they, it was third down and like eight at the 15 yard line in the first half, Rylo scampered out of bounds. There was a temptation. It's a scrimmage. Big deal if you throw it across your body and a bad thing happens, right? It's just trying to make a play in a scrimmage. No, build a habit, do it the right way. He runs out of bounds, they get a chance at a field goal. Now, I know that didn't go particularly well. But the point is, like, you know, accept what's there, and sometimes that your fate is to live for another down. And I thought he did really well at that. I thought the pass, you know, when he hit Bullock, you know, on the, it was like third and 10 or whatever, he hits him across the middle for right. 20 yards. It wasn't like it was the most amazing throw you ever saw, but it had pace on it right there. It just looked like a play that was executed like it was supposed to be, that wasn't as much a year ago. And I don't want to act like they never got it right last year, but they sure didn't get it right at a high clip. And I know key guys on the defense were out. We got to be a little careful with all this.
Mm-hmm.
I do think actually this fan base and the media has been pretty cautious all spring with Dylan Rylo and some of the hype. I actually think that, like, I don't think it's been like overboard for who he was as a recruit and stuff. There's been excitement, but people have kind of kept it level. But Saturday was one of those days where everybody sees it with their own eyes. They're like, yeah, he's got tools, man. And that's obvious. Now, where that goes and what that means wins wise, and if you can have good health with all that, we will wait and see. But there's a reason he was rated what he was rated. And I think a lot of people would nod their head to that. They see those qualities.
The competition is always open. Nobody has a spot locked down, even in the middle of the season. But we're all real here. How many going into fall camp, and they're going to have an important summer. They got to get better this summer, and they're going to work a lot on focus to get better every day. But when they open up fall camp to lead up to UTEP, BC, in your honest opinion, how many jobs that involve real competition are open on the offensive side?
I would say for the starting jobs, like three maybe, two or three. And I see running back to me is still up in the air to be grabbed, like how you want to sort that out exactly and how Gabe comes back. I think there's stuff on the inside of the line that's interesting. Like I kind of know that we know the main guys, right? Mm-hmm. We know like Evans, Lutovsky, Mazuka, whomever, like, three or four guys there for those two spots. But so you could count like one of those spots, you know, maybe as like, okay, who exactly fills that? And then maybe one of the receiver spots, it sure feels like the veterans. I'll tell you what, Nair, you know, when he caught the ball in stride, you saw that extra gear he has, where he's one of those guys where, you know, a defender thinks he has an angle on him and he like, nope, you know, skips it up one notch and he's past him. So I like Nair and Banks. And then, you know, I thought it was interesting, you know, we didn't talk about him a ton this spring, but Bonner, not only
had
the first
him.
Touchdown, but I mean, so but his spot, like who's that sort of third or receiver there. But I think what we saw at the receivers is that's a rotation where whomever starts, okay, they're the starter. That's nice. But the key is now, can you go seven or eight deep? Yeah. And I've been saying that on the show like every week. Confidence was raised a little bit Saturday watching that. And I felt really bad that Demetrius Bell went down because I think he would have been a part of it. And yet I still think they've got enough bodies to make that possible. But to your question, Gary, I think like there's two or three spots where I couldn't say like in 10, like he's definitely the starter, but I think a lot of it you could guess.
Kenny Bell, I overheard him talking about this after the game, explosiveness at that position. And I'm glad you brought up Bonner. And this goes back to what we saw in the perimeter passing game of having a body like that out there on the edge. If you look at how he was talked about and you saw a little bit more of him in his natural wide receiving position, what he was recruited for, do you think that there's more than just good story in the spring that this is Janarin Bonner is going to be very much in the mix impact type of dude come fall?
Yeah. I do. Because it makes all the sense in the world. Like, he's got, when you run those you know, those short screens, and you've got to have that first key block out there. And you're talking about a 220-pound guy who last year was lining up as a fullback, who this staff right away admired for his, like, want to just stick his head in there, you know, like, okay, I'll do this. I'll do the dirty stuff. And I think he's that type of player. So I think it's a very real story. Is he going to be like the leader in receptions or anything like that? Yeah. No, maybe he's that different type. He's that junkyard dog type of wide receiver. But that's what they need to fill out. And I think they're trying to do a good job of that. Like, there's guys like that at wide receiver that can do that sort of stuff. And I think they've got some tight ends like that too, who we are not going to talk a whole lot about, but they're going to matter a lot. Like your Lyndon Myers and guys like that, who they've recruited in this last class, who, you know, they're going to do some of that junkyard stuff for you, and it's going to matter. Bonner, I do think, is going to have a big role. I think Malachi Coleman, if you remember, Garrett McGuire in the spring was asked about how they're blocking, and he said, man, I can't wait to get Malachi back out there because he's just got an edge about him with that. I see him fitting into that picture of that stuff we saw them running. And then you got a quarterback in Dylan, real quick back to him, that he accepts and wants to do that stuff. He knows all those explosives don't just come from flinging it 40 yards down the field. I remember one of his first comments to us this spring was, get those guys the ball in space, and they can make the 30-yard plays out of a 2-yard pitch and catch. So I think there's a lot they can get done on that short passing game that can hopefully open up some explosives when you have guys like Bonner really willing to block and put their body on the line.
Hey, what does it say about the infrastructure when new guys that either just showed up in January or redshirted last year, when we watch them for the first time an extensive period in the spring game, they look like they belong? Whether it be a Guthrie, whether it be a Boodle, whether it be a Barnes, whether it be a Smith, whether it be a Flint, the young guys look like they belonged, and they didn't look like they were out of place or it was just helter-skelter. When you see that in a spring game, which can be helter-skelter, what is that? What does that give you any indication of what the infrastructure is starting to look like?
Yeah, well, it connects back to that thing of, like, everybody gets reps. Whether you're the third team guy or fourth team guy, just keep piling up your reps and, you know, things will work themselves out. But if you stack up that many snaps, eventually you're going to get better. And I think the good thing for those guys is they look at what Tony White did last year and they're thinking, I can still play, you know, like, yeah, I might be third team on this day in March or April, but this is a defense that played like 25 guys last year, you know, against Minnesota in the opener. It was like 22 people on the field in the first half or something like that. So all those guys probably, and I know recruits look at this too, think like, there's opportunity there. If I just put my head down and go, they are going to look at the film, they're going to analyze it, they are going to correct me and give me a chance to grow and actually play. It's not just false goods. And so I think that motivates those guys during the spring and keeps them going. They know it's not just a wasted first season. There is even a possible shot they could help in some way. And you get better when you feel that sort of pressure or opportunity. And I do agree with you. I think I thought it was just sort of a clean, like, solid, like, scrimmage, you know, like it felt a lot better to me than a lot of them I've watched, which I'll be honest, have bored me to tears sometimes through the years. This one did not. And a lot of it was Riola. Yes. But I just thought it was a good scrimmage, a good way to end the spring for really both sides. And I know it was more of an offensive-centric one than what we talked about. But I think there's some young defenders you mentioned that had good days.
Going back to the wide receivers, and you brought up Jacory Barney, listening to him talk afterwards, there are freshmen that have maybe a different way of going about their realization of the type of player they can be. You've seen him in high school. You knew the type of player they're getting. A lot of people are very high on him. You got a chance to see a little of that in the spring game too. But then what he said afterwards, he mentions the taking one back against Colorado, the confidence for a young man who has yet to even play a meaningful college snap. It's hard not to like with the way he carried himself afterwards, but also what he showed on the field. Where do you think his ultimate ceiling as a freshman can be in this offense and in special teams?
I hate to put a ceiling on him. I just like the fact that ever since he committed, he's carried that mindset. That's just who he is. Mm-hmm. So this isn't like new. It's not like it took the fifth practice for that to pop up. I remember a lot of times in December, before guys get on campus to enroll early, I'll do like a final feature story on them. And so I talked to him for about 15 minutes, and the same guy was after the spring game. Like, same, like, you know, I know, he's like, I know Nebraska's 5-7 last year. It's going to be different. And mm-hmm. I was like, why? He's like, well, I'll be there. They'll be, you know, like, we're going to have some guys that can throw it and catch it. It's just going to be different. We'll make those plays they didn't make. And so he fully expected to come in and be that dude who caught people's notice and all that. And then you hear Thomas Fedoni, like, after the game, and much is made of, you know, Thomas and how he's hard on himself. Like, if he doesn't do it quite right, he's kind of that perfectionist. And it sounds like Ja'Cory's got some of those same traits in him, which if you cap that at the right spot, I think can be make you really great. So I just like his swagger. He comes from that Miami area. I think it's good because they're going to keep sort of recruiting down there, I think, somewhat. And if you can have at least a couple of those players like him and maybe Vincent Shavers or somebody on defense pop out for and get some snaps on that side of the ball, that helps down there too with recruiting. So it's funny, like every guy we were asked about, I don't always bring it back to recruiting, but I can in this case where they have some nice dots that connect in that way. And I think Barney and Shavers are examples of it. But I've loved that kid since he committed and signed. I just like all he's about. He played QB in high school too, so he just knows all sorts of offensive football, and it helps him.
And he will be a fan favorite by his actions and his interviews. Get you out of here on this. So, as you know what the schedule is, and I know you're not a schedule guy, but at some point we're all going to go, hey, I think this is a 7-5, 8-4. Here's the ceiling. After what you know from guys that didn't play and what you saw, is this team better equipped to get off to a hot start than maybe some other comparable teams?
Yeah, because I think they're going to be better at quarterback. And that's, it goes to first, it's everything, right? I mean, it just means so much. Like, we could talk around it, but if you get just, you know, solid quarterback play, you win the first game last year, and you're looking at Colorado different, and that starts different. And there's been times where I feel like the QB play, I mean, Adrian obviously had some good years or good moments in there. But I just really love the direction they have at that position. And I think Harburg gave some confidence that there's more than, you know, just one guy who's, you know, they're getting better as a group. You got to give Glenn Thomas some credit there. And there are going to be potholes that they're going to hit at times. That's going to happen this year at that position, and people can be prepared for that and know it's going to be there. But it's, you know, you just watched it Saturday, and I feel like they've upgraded at some key spots where they had to do it, at receiver, at QB. Running back still is a mystery to me. I'll admit that. I do think with the schedule, and also you're not playing a Big Ten team right off the bat, and not that they shouldn't have won some of those games in the past, but you don't want to take UTEP for granted, but I think that's nice that at least you have that kind of game to start the season, and hopefully you handle your business and everyone's feeling good and you build some confidence off of it.
Yeah, absolutely. BC, great seeing you. Have a wonderful week. As we know, it never ends. It's only 122 days away.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's Brian Christopherson. I think that's an important thing to look at if this team can get off to a hot start, because they don't leave Lincoln until the end of September.
Yeah.
So you're going to play your first four games at home, and UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa, Illinois, before you go to Purdue. And so you have a chance, unlike last year where you play two games on the road,
right,
and you play a conference game against a team, an opponent that has owned you, and then mm-hmm. you go and play the great unknown that was out in Boulder, you have a chance to keep your head above water and take steps along the way before you get into the meet where you go to Purdue, but then, hey, you come right back home, and then you get a chance to take a breath.
Yep.
Because you'd have a bye week before you went to Indiana, and then it gets real on the final five games of the year. It actually, for a young team, I think it sets up perfectly for them to take steps along the way and not get like just bludgeoned and you go, uh-oh, we're going back to, you know, square one.
Yeah, the confidence for this group overall, the group that was here last year that played such a prominent role, younger guys, and also the guys that looked a factor in this year, and even some of your veterans too. We talked about this a lot last year, the inability to stack good performances together, whether it's two or three wins, and to be able to have that opportunity. Again, and nothing's guaranteed, but to have that opportunity early in the season because you're playing at home, I'm really fascinated on what that can do. You brought up the most important part of it too, having that bye week before you get into that final stretch run of Indiana, Ohio State, UCLA, then USC, Wisconsin, Iowa, to be able to hopefully, if it all works out, and again, a lot of different factors, health and everything, that you have a respectable record going into that, and you find yourself with the kind of confidence that this program, not even this team under Matt Rhule, but this program hasn't had a chance to experience in a very long time, thinking about the starts that they've gotten off to over the past few years.
Yep. All right, AK is coming up here in a little bit. Last time we was on, we talked about Chili's. That was great. I saw somebody last night went to Applebee's, had a terrible experience. Not locally.
You loved
not
it.
Not locally.
Okay,
I'm like,
good.
That shows you. Why are you going to Applebee's?
And Matt Rhule, we found out, was a fry cook at Chili's, too. That's where he met his wife. I know. She was a server.
Wow.
A lot of important people got it all going at Chili's. You notice they didn't say Applebee's.
So
more than baby back ribs.
So a good friend of mine, Dari, was when he was in school in Norman at Oklahoma, he worked at a Chili's.
Jeez.
Not where he met his wife. He met Jen in Lincoln, and now they live in Charlotte.
We need a Chili's alum page.
I don't know. There must be something about...
Reunion?
I bet... You know what?
Yeah, I bet Dari's a great guy. Chili's has good people.
Yeah.
I'm taking from this. Andy, Dari.
Some very talented Chili's people have started at Chili's.
Matt Rhule?
I think, you know, if you work in the food industry, you spend a lot of time together. You get to see, you know, everybody under stressful situations.
Strategy.
Plus, good on the food industry people. They will go out together. Like, you know, when the shift is over, they're the ones that are walking into the bars.
Mm. Yep. They're a tight group.
I bet there are a lot of relationships that lead to marriages that come out of, you know, hey, we were both servers at, you know,
that's
Billy
true.
Bob's Drive-In.
That's true. Before you even think about dating them, you get to see them under pressure.
Many
how do they pivot?
You work closely together.
Yeah.
You don't have to be creepy.
That's right, because you're just there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dip your wing in the ranch, yeah.
I saw the movie Waiting. I know what happens.
Yeah, Flair.
No, Flair. That was Office Space.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Wrong Jennifer Aniston.
Yes, true.
Don't ever go wrong with Jennifer Aniston,
no,
Jimmy.
No, you can't.
But if you don't learn anything from me today, that's what you should learn.
Mm-hmm. We've learned a lot from you. Nick has got a whole broadcast from
you. I do. I have at least three innings worth.
Between you and Fremont Fred.
Gold.
Hey. To make sure that this game is played today, I'll go out and pull the tarp. I'll pull a Sindelar and go out there and help the grounds crew.
Yeah.
All right. Andy is going to join us here in a little bit. Don't forget, if you are looking for information on how to help, how to donate, 1620thezone.com has the tornado relief page up that you can see. All great information there for people in our community, whether you need help or you want to give help. Trust me. Hearing from some people that are running the Relevance Center, completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way.
No, in a great way.
This community has stepped up.
Mm-hmm.
Generosity beyond capacity
Is
the best way to describe it. We're back with more after this.